everyone. So I'm start off with a bit of context about myself. My day job actually has nothing to do with games or writing games. I generally design and build hardware and electronics. So I do stuff from single units to 100,000. So this is actually my first time doing a reverse engineering project, although I do have some background in C, which is what at least half of the game was written in. So also for context, I'm not solo on this project. There's a Discord community with a whole bunch of people in it. So when I say I and we, that is who I'm referring to. It's not just me. That's also if you're considering your own projects, finding communities and finding people to work with is absolutely invaluable. This isn't something that you could really solo. So I imagine a few of you recognize the name already, but for context, it's a first-person shooter that was released in 2002. So right around the period that a lot of people started playing games of that nature. So it's very nostalgic for a lot of people, myself included. I have a lot of hours in Skyrail. I'm sure a lot of you do as well. But there are actually three games with the same name. So there is the console version, which is definitely the best version. I'm going to just say that now. There was also a PC version, which was written by Gearbox, which used a version of the Gold Source engine as well. And there was also a Game Boy Advance version. But I'm going to be talking about the console version specifically. So why? Nostalgia is clearly a thing that a lot of people have. But this was also something I started around the start of the pandemic, when a lot of people suddenly had a lot of free time. And a lot of other projects came out at a similar time as well. So if anyone knows the Jak and Daxter series, there's Open Goal, which is a complete source remake of all three Jak and Daxter games. If you haven't seen that, really worth checking out as well. And there are people who've done the same with GTA games as well. So full source rewrites of that as well. It's a really interesting problem. So I've learned a whole bunch of skills along the way. Going from never reverse engineering anything to being like comfortable with reverse engineering, understanding the principles, understanding what goes wrong, what goes right when the compiler is doing it, but annoying when you then try and look at what the compiler has outputted. There are other benefits as well. So this is how modding can be done on games of this era. It's much harder when you don't have access to the source code and when it uses a completely fresh engine, which is what a lot of the game uses. It also allows us to extract resources. So it's incredibly popular to create video game levels and put them into VR chats. I don't know if anyone uses that as well, but that's been a thing that a lot of other people have actually done with different games. And this just makes it possible to pull out all of the assets and put them in places they were never meant to be. It's also weird to look at the consoles of that era because they are pretty resource constrained. So the PS2 is 32 megs of RAM, the Xbox is 64 megs, and it's one of the last generations that allowed you to use 100% of the hardware. So it actually feels surprisingly close to embedded development, which is what my day job really is. So some of the techniques there are surprisingly more transferable than I thought they'd be. It's also really useful for speedrunners as well. People are still speedrunning the game 24 years later. So in fact, within the last year, people discovered a glitch that they just didn't know about before. One of the levels, you can just drive through the wall in a particular spot and cut out about 30 seconds worth of time. So yeah, things like that should be possible when you understand the collision data, which we still haven't done yet. There might be other holes in the level somewhere or other glitches of that nature. But that's a bit of context about why you might want to do this kind of thing. But where do you actually get started on a project? In my case, it was getting the disk into a computer and looking at the files that are actually on the disk. So we can see there are two interesting ELF files there. There's action and driving. So one of the first things that you realize is there's not one game engine. There are two completely different game engines running this thing. And they just hand off between each other in the loading screens. We also see that there's one big file there, right? Files.bin is a single package containing every single asset there. But yeah, we have no idea how to interpret that data yet. So the next step that I took was get it into Ghidra. If anyone's not aware of it, Ghidra is a reverse engineering tool that was released by the NSA for entirely non-nefarious purposes, I'm sure. But yeah, it's really good. There are plugins for pretty much any platform under the sun, including PS2, Xbox, GameCube. There are plugins, you drop them in, you drop in the executable, and you get whatever the compiler outputted. In this case, we were actually really lucky. The developers of the game didn't remove the symbols, so we can see every function name in the game. That gives us a lot of context about what each function might be doing and how the overall structure works, at least for the action engine. For the driving engine, they did strip out the symbols, but in a previous version, in Agent Under Fire, which is another game in the same series with very similar context, they didn't strip out the symbols from the GameCube version. And Ghidra actually has some really powerful tools that takes the overall look of a function, so what signature it has, how it is called by other functions, and it builds up a tree, and it can compare the two side by side and map, likely this function here is the same as this function here in the other thing. And that even works across different architectures as well. So you can take the GameCube Agent Under Fire, put it on top of the Nightfire PS2 version, and just transfer the two symbols across pretty effectively. It's not perfect, but it's kind of mind-blowing that it works as well as it does. So with that, we got a reasonable understanding of how the engine was structured, what the data looks like, and we were able to write some Python tools that would allow us to extract a bunch of the assets. So we found what, within that files.bin, what the levels were, how they were identified, and everything that goes into those levels as well. The other thing to note is that because they were very performance constrained, they like hyper-optimize for every platform. So the GameCube version has textures that are in a very GameCube-specific format. Same with the audio playback. It's not like the engine is receiving a common file and interpreting it. They are baked into exactly what the platform and hardware is capable of doing. Same with the PS2 models as well, for example. So the PS2 has a coprocessor that takes a bunch of data, but also tells you how to mangle and draw that data. And that's done by a coprocessor. But the instructions for that coprocessor are actually mixed in with the model data. So you get a binary blob that is just handed over in one go. And actually getting the geometry out of that is a bit fiddly, but it's very doable. So at the end of it, we have full level data extracted into Blender. This works for PS2, it works for all of the levels, and it also works for all of the assets that are used to make up the game as well. The only thing that we haven't got working at this point in terms of extracting models is stuff that uses skinning and face blending as well. But all of the rigid stuff is extracted now. It also means when we've got the executable and we understand what all the functions are, we can start extracting the embedded stats. So here's some of the audio data, but we've got the same for weapons, for everything else that goes into actually making the gameplay. And we've also been able to extract all of the audio as well in original format. So one of the other things you might want to do with these projects is bring up a game that was, you know, written 20 years ago for hardware that is starting to fail and get it running on modern stuff. If that's your only goal, emulators work really well. So PCSX2, Dolphin all run the game perfectly. But there are limitations of those two platforms. So the GameCube audio quality has been crushed to fit on the much smaller discs. So I think a GameCube disc is 1.5 gigs maybe. They're just physically smaller. They don't have the room for all of the full quality assets. Same with PCSX2. The game looks pretty good on that platform, but yeah, some of the textures are not as high quality as on the Xbox version as well. So the canonical best version of the game, I'd say, would be the Xbox version. There are also other limitations of the platform. So PS2, 32 megs of RAM meant that they had to cut some features from the multiplayer to get it running. The Xbox had, I think, twice that. So that was the best version to play overall if you want. I think it was 14 bots or 16 bots. The Xbox version is the one that you really want. And the Xbox is basically just an old PC. It was cut down a bit in terms of the operating system, but functionally it's an x86 processor in a box. And basically that means that the object code that the game is will run on any other x86 processor, with some compatibility stuff in between the two. So you need to map from the Xbox functions, which are similar but not exactly identical to DirectX. But it turns out someone's already done that in CXBX Reloaded here. So that this process of taking code that was written for one platform, for one set of APIs, and running it on something similar but not identical is called high-level emulation. And surprisingly, you can then stack that with another emulation layer, which is what Wine kind of is, but except the name tells you it's not an emulator. But that's debatable. That's semantics. You can play the game on Linux, on a modern PC, through Wine and through CXPX Reloaded if you want to. The compatibility of that process is a bit janky. But that leaves us with another thing that you can do is, if you're running it on a modern PC, you can inject your own code into that process as well. Windows just lets you do this as a thing. So if you want to work out how the game is working, you can take a function, you can write over the top of that function, you can jump into your own code at that point instead. You can then essentially do what you like. You own that process, you own that function. So you can make it do nothing at all, see what it was doing in the original context, or you can write your own version with logging and inject it into the game. In the future, you could also inject the entire graphic subsystem or the audio subsystem. You could replace the whole thing, so you don't have to have that compatibility layer anymore. You can effectively swap out the front end of the game, so to speak, without needing to rewrite the whole thing from source. But you could also repeat that process for every single function in the game and eventually have a full copy of the code that you've been able to test against the original code or against the rest of your code. And eventually, with enough effort, you could end up with a complete copy of the game, testing at every single step along the way. And that isn't a concept that I came up with. This was first something documented by Matt Casey. I don't know if anyone has heard of him. Yep, a few people there. That technique is something that he demonstrated and we've built on top of. But now let's have a bit of trivia. Here's a snippet of code. I will tell you that there is a bug in there somewhere. I will stand out of the way for a sec. Shout if you can spot the bug, given that this is meant to generate key codes. Anyone seeing it? Well, you are all... Oh, go on.
You got forward and initialized it.
It is initialized, sorry, I've just cut that part of the snippet off. It is initialized to zero. Sorry, that was my bad. There is a bug in there, but you are all thinking exactly the same way the game developers did. I will point you there. Does anyone see it now? Yeah, so for context, if you're trying to generate numbers between 0000 and 9999, you've got to do modulo 10, not modulo 9. And that bug has been undiscovered for 22 years. So there we go. I shared that on the Discord. And yeah, people agreed. Until I got that message. So it turns out it is actually... There we go. So what's actually going on there is, surprisingly, there is another bug. But yeah, this was my thought process when seeing that, and it took me quite a long time to work it out in the end. But it turns out the scrambling animation that is being done by that tool is just generating a random digit and displaying it for a few frames. And it only locks that digit in on the next time the animation process is run. But when you get the code completed, the scrambling process stops. The animation just remains on the last frame, and it never runs that last step of updating that last digit. So the actual code was not ending in 9. It was just that happened to be the last random digit that was scrambled. So the code was correct, but there was another bug that confounded that. There are some other bugs in the game as well. So quite a lot of people thought that the GameCube version didn't have some effects for performance reasons. It turns out those assets actually do exist. They're just pointing the wrong way, and the GameCube just culls them out. There's another bug as well, which was even more confusing. So I was re-implementing part of the menu, and it turns out they used a placeholder of, I think it's 999 or minus 999 as a placeholder for an empty value. So when the original code did that, it was reading outside of the bounds of an array, and because it owns the entire processor, and that was still a valid bit of memory, it just read it anyway. But when I injected a new version, that new version was in a new DLL, which had different memory mapping, and so it ended up reading out of the bounds of the new array, and crashing, even though it was a completely faithful re-implementation of the original. So that took a while. There are lots of head scratches with this. But yeah, like I said at the beginning, this is not something that I really think is possible solo. There's probably 500,000 lines of code, and it's taken us, you know, 3 years on and off to get 7% of those rewritten. So not something you can do solo for sure. But that's partly why I'm giving this talk, is to show people how this goes. I want to make more people aware of it, and I want to make sure that people know how they could get involved if they are interested. Obviously, there is a legal question here. So the game is still EA's IP, even though the actual rights to that are uncertain. So it's not clear who's allowed to distribute it, if anyone. It's not clear whether the Bond trademark is still permitted to be distributed in this context. So we don't think there's any commercial value to the IP anymore, but it is still their IP. So there's a risk that if we do open source it, it would be seized, or cease and desisted. So yeah, I've talked a little bit about this, but yeah, we think it's not possible to do. And there's the double-edged sword of AI here as well. So in some contexts, it could be useful. It does definitely work at identifying mangled functions. It can very quickly take a snippet of code, say, this looks similar to some other code. But it does feel like you're defeating the point a little bit of a passion project, inspired by humans and inspired by nostalgia, to then farm your hobby off to an AI. It just feels like you're really defeating the point there. So I'm kind of in two minds about that one. So yeah, there's a whole community of us. If anyone wants to join, I'll leave this up at the end. But I will switch over now to a quick demo and actually show that in action. So it does take a while. This is a terrible laptop. Still doing something. So these are all logging that has been injected into the game as well. So we can see what the menu system is doing by the end of the song. This is all fixed resolution. But this is modified, and when it...
You're on a fool's errand, Mr. Bond. I'm just... I'll credit you with persistence, Mr. Bond. Persistence and failure. There are NATO launch sites on Earth which could challenge the arsenal on my island. Those bases will be incinerated. By turning these defensive missiles into massive defense.
So yeah, thank you very much. If anyone's got any questions. So two things. If anyone wants to join the Discord and find out more, then the QR code will appear on screen in a second. And if anyone's got any questions, I'm going to be going over to the question and answers tent. So yeah, thank you very much.